Penguin Random House Audio presents The Greek Histories, the sweeping history of ancient Greece as told by its first chroniclers, Herodotus, Thucydides, Xenophon, and Plutarch. Edited by Mary Lefkowitz and James Rahm, with an appendix by John E. Lendon. Translations by Carlton Brownson, Richard Crawley, Mary Lefkowitz, Pamela Mensch, Bernadotte Perrin, James Rahm, and Samuel Shirley. This program includes a downloadable bonus PDF of maps and the appendix from the book. Read for you by Vivian Laney. Introduction. That's ancient history, someone might say today in dismissing a topic that's stale or irrelevant. But in fact, ancient history is neither of those things. This volume was undertaken in the belief that the Greek historians are exciting to read in their own right, accessible to all once certain obstacles have been overcome, and of great importance to us as we navigate our own times and our own historical evolution. They wrote for our benefit as much as for their readers, or more accurately, listeners, in the classical Greek world or the High Roman Empire. Thucydides, writing at the end of the 5th century BC, understood clearly that the story he told, the war between Spartan and Athenian coalitions, what we know as the Peloponnesian War, would provide paradigms for future ages. In his prologue, he addressed those who wish to have an accurate knowledge of what happened and, because of human nature, will likely happen to be the same as or similar to these events. He would no doubt be pleased to know that his first English translator was Thomas Hobbes, the Enlightenment political philosopher who went on to write Leviathan and other influential works, including one entitled Human Nature, or that his book is still required reading at the West Point Military Academy, or that policymakers speak today of a Thucydides trap, in which an established superpower, as Sparta once was, feels it must fight to avoid being overtaken by a rival, like Athens. Thanks to its exploration of the deepest levels of human nature, the work has become what its author intended, an everlasting possession. Human nature stands at the center not just of Thucydides' work, but of all Greek historical writing. Thus, the Greek historians, in contrast to modern ones, weave speeches, conversations, and even in one famous case, Thucydides' account of negotiations between Milos and Athens, a dialogue into their narratives. These speech acts give us access to the minds and thoughts of historical actors, whether individuals or city-states. The latter can speak collectively through their ambassadors and envoys. They serve to put human beings, rather than impersonal or abstract forces, squarely at the center of historical change. They engage our emotions and our moral sense in the same way that the epic poems of Homer do, for indeed those poems, the Iliad in particular, were the primary model with which the first Greek historian, Herodotus, worked. This centrality of speeches and conversations may surprise modern readers who live in an age of audio recording devices and of careful documentation of quotes. When Herodotus reveals to us in his very first episode an exchange between a king and his chief bodyguard held in a private room of a palace several centuries before his own time, we may feel that the rules of historical writing, as we understand them, are being broken. But Herodotus played by a different set of rules, as did his successors. In the next generation, Thucydides, writing about events of his own day, addresses the question of the veracity of his speeches. But even while acknowledging the validity of the question, he still claims the right to put words in people's mouths based on what he thinks they ought to have said in particular situations. It's hard to conceive of an ancient historical narrative without such inserted speeches and comments, just as it's difficult to conceive of a modern one that has them. An experiment of this kind, attempted several decades ago by a biographer of Ronald Reagan, featuring imagined dialogue that had not been recorded or witnessed, was met with widespread outrage and disdain. This bright dividing line helps define larger differences in the ways ancient and modern historians conceived of their roles. Whereas today's historians seek the truth of facts, their ancient Greek counterparts sought the truth of story. They shaped the presentation of events to create unity and coherence, amplified crucial points by the inclusion, or in some cases, invention, of speeches, and highlighted emblematic figures while ignoring those whose lives offered fewer insights. In some cases, as in those of Xenophon and Plutarch, they might shift focus towards leaders and states they considered admirable, giving their writing a strong moralistic or ethical slant. Both Xenophon and Plutarch were students of moral philosophy as well as historical writers. Part of the moral dimension of these works is their awareness or inclusion of the gods, an element they share with Greek epic and tragic literature. Of the four authors presented in this volume, three show explicitly how the divine plays a role in the working out of human history, bringing low those who transgress or who strive for too much power. The fourth, Thucydides, avoids all direct reference to the gods and expresses skepticism about some aspects of traditional religion, but he hews so closely to tragic narrative patterns, for example, juxtaposing the greatest disaster that befell Athens, the defeat in Sicily, with the city's greatest moment of hubris, its annihilation of the population of Milos, as to imply, perhaps, that divine forces operate even in his universe. Both he and Herodotus clearly learned much from the tragic playwrights whose works were first staged in their lifetimes, Aeschylus, Sophocles, and Euripides. Sophocles, in fact, seems to have been a friend of Herodotus. Xenophon, too, saw many of those plays performed, and he remained deeply convinced, as he says at one point, that the gods do not ignore the impious and those who commit impious acts. Plutarch lived a full five centuries after the great age of tragic drama had ended, yet he too drew on the plays of the Athenian tragedians, which he encountered on papyrus scrolls rather than in the theater to bring out the cosmic context of historical action. He quotes liberally from the plays to reflect on events in his lives, as when he imports an extended passage of Menelaus, a play he attributed to Sophocles, to give a larger dimension to the career of Demetrius the besieger. Such quotes are more than mere adornment or literary erudition. They invoke the imaginative world of tragedy, a world in which the human is deeply enmeshed with the divine. Plutarch's frequent allusions to dreams, oracles, and portents governing the lives of his subjects or signaling their deaths are further evidence that we mortals are not the captains of our fate, however high we may rise. This overlap between Greek tragic drama and Greek historical narrative helps explain how we, the editors of modern libraries, the Greek plays, have come to compile the Greek histories, and also accounts for the choices we have made as to what authors to include here. Many historical writers we might have included have been left to one side. The four we have chosen are those who most belong to the broad mainstream of Greek literature, a tradition steeped in mythic and tragic patterns, and in an awareness of the larger context in which historical action is set. The same spirit we believe that makes the Greek epics and tragedies so meaningful today, and so stirring to the human soul, is very much in evidence in the authors presented here. Their themes are eternal, their portraits of character are indelible, and they convey with moving clarity their sense of the larger cosmos that gives meaning to human events. Our selections have been made with one eye on these aspects of the genre, the other on the need for continuity and completeness. We hope that our volume tells a coherent story of the evolution of Greece between the 6th and early 3rd century BC, that is, from the late Archaic Age through the whole of the Classical period, and far enough into the Hellenistic world to illustrate the shape that world would take as the successors of Alexander the Great donned crowns and claimed kingdoms. Naturally, there are gaps in continuity where our four sources are silent, especially in the mid-5th century, covered in summary fashion by Thucydides, but in a passage not included here, and the mid-4th, a period only partially accessible here through Plutarch's Demosthenes and the first segments of Alexander. We have supplied some
sample complete. Ready to continue?